Okay, we've got we're busy with the amendment to the Taxation Act, and we agreed, I think, yesterday that first of all we'd ask the Department of Transport and Tourism specifically to give us a bit of a background, not around the legislation specifically, but around what is Autumn Act, what is social autumn now, and so on, in the sense of that. And then we've got colleagues from the Department of Public Enterprises, who I understand did work after our meeting yesterday with our colleagues from the Department of Transport to look at cleaning up some of the proposals. So we'll have a presentation on that, and then we can proceed from there. Okay, so over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Chairman. Unfortunately, we're having a problem getting the projector to do what it would normally do. But we have distributed copies of the presentation, hard copies, and which gives us an overview as requested by the committee today on social order mail and auto theft. My colleague, who's the chief director for Bus and Rail, will be going to take us through the presentation. Jan David,
thanks, Chair. You've asked us to give you a bird's eye view. We started off on that, and then it changed into a snapshot approach, and you ended up with general background, because you've asked for five excuses, but I'll stop.
We've actually heard that many
answers. I'll try to go through it at quite a speed. If you go to slide number two, it starts off with Autofax Passenger Pty Limited. It's a wholly owned subsidiary of Transnet, and it's a Pty Limited as opposed to Metro Rail and Social Auto Mail being divisions of Transnet. This is a Pty Limited. So the deal will be structured differently from the Metro Rail and the Social Auto Transfer processes. It provides long distance coach services throughout South Africa with two entities. It's got a fully luxury entity which is called TransLux, which operates with luxury buses. And it's got city services which operates with semi-luxury coaches. Those are scheduled services. It has approximately 600 employees, of which 450 are drivers, and it has a 35% market share in the market of full luxury and semi-luxury services. If you go to the next slide, which looks at TransLux specifically, which operates with the luxury vehicles. There's quite a difference between a luxury and a semi-luxury vehicle. More or less a seat placement. It operates daily more than 100 destinations. Its principal depots are in Cape Town, Pretoria, and its secondary depots are in Durban, Port Elizabeth, and East London. And it provides these services with 44 luxury coaches, which a large amount of them are double decks. The reason why we're raising double decks, we don't think that's the right coach. A double-deck coach requires a trailer to be dragged behind it because you don't have a luxury compartment underneath. So that's one of the issues you address when it transfers to SARTC. City-to-city services. We don't want to operate with double decks, we don't operate with single decks. You don't need to drag a trailer behind the bus. And the trailer makes it much more costly to provide the services than just having a single deck bus.
So a good 20 or 30 of them
are these double decks, the majority of them are. Just by all the vehicles that are operated by Autopax are on lease. They don't own any of the vehicles, they're on full maintenance lease. On city to city, which is the lower level service, if you can call it that, it operates daily from most parts of the country to Gauteng. It operates between Cape Town and the Southern Cape, which is quite a new service they've introduced. It operates between Gauteng and the Eastern Cape, which is a minor service to the mine workers. And its principal depots are in Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Pretoria. And its secondary depots are in Central Rand and Carletonville. And it's got a total of 193 vehicles. It operates quite a substantial service between Pretoria and Polokwane, too. I'm sure anybody who's been on that highway has seen the buses, quite a substantial number of them operating there. If you go to the next slide, which is the financial position, we have concluded as a department a due diligence exercise, a validation of the business in terms of what it's worth, and a draft business plan, which we will be sending to Cabinet. The current operational shortfall is 36 million rand on a 2007-08 financial year. It is rapidly increased from 2006-07, and one of the issues there is probably the uncertainties in terms of where it's going. It's really affecting this entity in the provision of its services. It has a current shareholder loan of 110 million rand, which is exhausted, and it's technically insolvent. There's a spelling error there, sorry for that. It is subsidized from this loan that it gets from the shareholder rather than physically taking that loan and buying assets. Okay, the business plan requirements, give you a view on that for 2019 to 11-12, which is an ex-MTEF cycle. It has it will require 171 million, 148 and 195 million to turn the business around in terms of business plan. That includes your operational and your capital subsidies for this business. The operational deficit reduces as you move forward, as you buy your own assets. The idea is for Autopac to buy its own assets and use the lease agreement with Viamax. If you go to the next slide, and this more gives you the strategic imperative for Autopac and why we need it over at SCRPC. The first bullet point is the implementation of the rural access strategy as approved by Cabinet. And it allows services to those people that's been neglected in areas where there is no services. The second strategic imperative is complementary services to Shuttle of the Mail and the provision of long-distance passenger services. There's a combination and alignment between Autopac and Shuttle of the Mail. There's very limited feeder distribution services for Shuttle of the Mail that's currently in place. The third issue is a pivotal role player in the successful provision of the 2010. The 1,422 vehicles we will be purchasing for 2010 will be out within Autopac. Autopac will set up a separate entity, which is called Autopac 2010, to provide these services. And then the last issue is the distribution of the fleet after 2010 within the public transport networks and the rollout of those networks. A substantial amount of the vehicles that we are buying are standard commuter vehicles. It's only the LOC vehicles, which are full luxury, and a portion of the match. But the biggest portion of that is commuter vehicles for the purpose of rolling out after 2010. And maybe just in terms of implementation plan, if you try to confine it, obviously first is the amendment of the Legal Concessions Act to allow for Autopac to move out of transit into SCRTC, and then for SCRTC to complete its business plan in all three spheres, which is the Autopac normal services, the Autopac 2010, and then deployment of the vehicles after 2010, a full comprehensive business plan on those issues. Our current business plan only addresses Autopac as is, and doesn't address Autopac 2010. And then the department's in the process of appointing a transaction advisor, and we will be establishing a project management office for intercity 2010 services at the department. And that project office, once this entity is in SCRC, will probably move from the department into SCRC. And then SCRCC will complete the activation process, which we started in May this year, on the vehicles required for 2010. Okay, that's Autopac. If you look at Shuttle of the Mail, we've managed to put a map in there that shows you the services that Shuttle of the Mail is providing. You've got the Trans-Karoo going to Cape Town, you've got the Algoa going to Port Elizabeth, and then Amatola going through East London, you've got the Durban services, your Komati Port services, and your Bosveld up to Messina. And we believe the service team Kimberley and Mafeking has been suspended. It's not running anymore, but there is a service team Pretoria and Mafeking. So that's more or less the route that is being served by Shuttle of the Mail. If you go to the next slide, it offers long, I think it's just a repetition of what I've said. Currently the business is a unit of Transnet, freight rail, and operates at a loss. It's being cross-subsidized by Transnet. And it's got fixed assets, rolling stock and coaches. There's a bifocal approach in terms of the business. It provides premier class services, which is focused on tourism, and it provides about 85% of its services provide to social services. You know, migrants going home, I believe they use the service 5 to 6 times a year to go home. And then opportunity exists to turn this business around, that's what we believe. If you look at a business overview of Shuttle of the Mail, there's 3.5 million passengers per annum. in the early 90s, that was around 7 to 8 million, so it's really reduced rapidly. And as I've said, 85% of that is economic class travelers. So 791 employees, so 20 services of over 8,000 kilometers. It's got 109 stations, of which 60 is only used by Shortfall of the Mail, and we believe that station should move over with Shortfall of the Mail to SRCC. Number of train trips is 6,840 feet per year, and just a rolling stock is a major issue in Shortfall of the Mail. It's got 1,223 coaches, and it consists of those different type of coaches. For its normal services, it uses about 500 coaches throughout the year. It's only during December and Easter where it uses the full complement of its service. So throughout the year, all the coaches are maintained, and then you've got the two peak areas in Easter and December where the full fleet is operational. So it's quite a cost to keep all the other coaches maintained for those two peaks. The majority, if I go to the next slide, the majority of coaches are in the age between 21 and 48 years. There's a definite need for investment in rolling stock. There's aged coaches are costing us a huge amount of money for maintenance, or actually Transnet, huge amount of money for maintenance. And then the steam cars are updated with compatible with the locomotives, the electric driven locomotives. And we have a huge amount of steam cars still in place. That more or less is what we are presenting in terms of the snapshot approach.
I mean, if you say it's running at a sort of a reasonable level, but I just want to know whether that level is actually, you know, above the line or below the line. If it is below the line, what it is, so we know what we inherited.
Just
let's
Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, there's a bit of shuffling, so I didn't hear the first question from Mr. Mashilo.
Basically, it was the different entities have different legal. Oh, you have any important facts to talk about? Well,
thank you, Chair. I think. That's an important question because I think the Legal Succession Act in current form only allows for Department of Transport to operate commuter services, which is a metro rail type service. And the long distance passenger rail has been left out of the equation. The amendment before Portfolio Committee is that we want enabling legislation to give the power to also provide the SARTC with long distance passenger rail as well as long distance bus. So it isn't currently what the legislation allows.
Okay, but that's not the question. That's interesting, but that's not the question. The question is, all
passengers
need to run.
Yeah,
you get it. Yeah.
Now, come to that.
Okay.
I think the difference is that it being a private company, it has no implications in terms of the other issues for retention and so on, because it's just a matter of share buyout in terms of the labor relations act, as opposed to a Boeing concern.
Okay,
I think in terms of the financial position, Yanda will just give a quick response with regard to the auto tax and the impact of the maintenance needs, as well as the issue of the shortfall with regard to social order.
Okay. In terms of the 26 million rand shortfall, the main attributor to that is Translux as opposed to City to City. Translux runs in direct competition with the local airlines, and it's quite a tough industry to be operating in. So that contributes the main loss to the 36 million. Also, one of the reasons is that the labour cost within Autopax is substantially higher than the industry's cost. That comes from the history of transit and employment of it. So the benefit to those labour is much better than the benefit within the private sector. In terms of the due diligence flag, and show David quite clearly. In terms of the lease agreement, those lease agreements are expiring, I think, in this year or early next year. They will be expiring, those lease agreements, at the end of their term. And they will not be renewed in terms of the business plan.
That's
their question.
It's not a cancellation, but
no, it's expiring. And in terms of the shortfall of the mail, shortfall is that shortfall of the mail has a shortfall of 1.1 billion, which has been calculated through the due diligence. In terms of the business plan, the shortfall is partially covered through an allocation already, Chief of National Treasury. There's an additional. From an allocation for the merger received from National Treasury, part of the shortfall is covered. There's also a shortfall in terms of the capital requirement, which is in the region of 440 million. That is to buy new coaches and start renewing the assets of shortfall of the month.
And is there an anticipation that it will require operational subsidies on an ongoing way?
Yes, most definitely it will be requiring operational subsidies.
Looking at this thing now, I'm saying, well, what are we going to end up with, okay? Now, I'm taking the implications of that the luxury service of Autopax vehicles, which I'm not saying about, is the main contributor to the 36 million.
yet it's competing with also a wide range of private operators that seem to be making a profit, otherwise they would not be there. So we need to just put our thumb onto exactly the reasons for this, you know, in terms of that, because that would make a determining factor for me to be satisfied that when the 1,442 buses that you've now tendered for come into this company, that we're not going to be running at 6 times 36 million, because there's going to be 6 times more buses operating within the fleet of Autopax, although they might be owned, that government has actually outlaid the capital for it, as opposed to the normal private sector having to go into the finance costs or market or interest and all those sort of things. But have we done a business plan or model that we can actually show us here to say that we are going to be putting this process into a operational program which doesn't show these major deficits? Because I don't think the Department of Transport, I don't know, I could be wrong, is going to be in a position to subsidize this when it's trying to subsidize currently the current bus fleet in this country for purposes of that. I would just like to get some clarity here. It worries me to death.
To follow up that one, whether these answers, whether these subjects,
no.
Hi, good morning, honorable members. Alvin Harris, Chief Director, Department of Public Enterprises, to make some contribution to the discussion and, you know, to check and rule me out of order if need be. I think one of the problems with why the Autopax, first, the last question, is Autopax currently being subsidized? Yes, there's an internal subsidy from Transnet holding company. Autopax is a 100% subsidiary of Transnet. So through a loan arrangement, Transnet basically keeps the business alive through an internal, let's call it an internal subsidy arrangement, which if Transnet as the parent company did not provide it, the company would then in fact go under. So there is, not formally from government, but from Transnet as the shareholder.
Can you give us a sense of ballpark there?
It's, I think at the moment it's around 110 million in total.
Shareholder
loan, yes. Yeah. Which is kind of the total amount it is at the moment. With respect to why Autopax is making a loss while other companies are making profit, there are several reasons. The labor cost in the transit environment is a bit more than the industry averages, and so they have a higher cost base that they're operating in the market with. They have higher cost base, but they can't charge necessarily a higher price for their services in the market, and they would get even less business. So that impacts on their profitability. Secondly, this also affects the part of the overall Transnet restructuring has been on the table for 8 years or more now, 7-8 years. And Autopax has always been one of those businesses that were going to go. And so you have management of Autopax that had a lack of focus, a lack of a long-term vision. What kind of a long-term strategy do we formulate that we can actually carry out over several years? And so it was a very haphazard gluing together on an annual basis. Okay, the company is still with us. We're not yet being sold, so what can we do for the next 6 months kind of a thing? So that really prevented a proactive, constructive action. Transnet also, between government and Transnet was the understanding as well that as part of the restructuring, this is a business that Transnet's got to exit. So as the parent company, they also did not place a lot of focus on, you know, what do we do to make sure that this company is profitable. So from our side, we think those are some of the primary reasons why the business is not doing as well as it could have been.
Yeah, you.
I just wanted to say then that's not going to change them, because that same stock is going to move, as I've seen the succession plan, into the hands of the department. So it's not going to change.
Well, what we're hoping would be the two big changes. One, that it being now firmly, as it being sold into a new company, the SRCC, with the particular mandate that they have, they would be able to, in the business plan and in the strategy, say, this is what we're going to do with the company, and seek the necessary funding from Treasury, and be able to execute according to that plan and take the, slowly bring the company back to profitability. So, there's certainly a much clearer way forward and what to do, where the company will be and what to do with the company, which gives it a better chance of being profitable.
Thank you, Chair. I think one of the things we need to note with regards to AutoPay is that up until 05-06, it's been turning a profit. However, one of the other issues that we need to just put on the table is the fact that the cost of the full maintenance fleet is quite astronomical. And in moving forward into SRCC, that full maintenance fleet will be lost, because it's coming towards the end of the cycle. So it would be much cheaper to SRCC or AutoPay in new form to acquire the assets themselves, as opposed to going on the full maintenance lease with the Bitbase Fireman.
Anything more?
Obviously, from some quarters, from the DFI, that I'm happy about what it is, the new entity within the Altman Corporation going forward, and the unhappiness is that it's likely to subsidize the hardware spent on the competing against private bus operators, along with private bus operators. So I think obviously that's not narrowly, that's an issue related to the legislation. So there's a safety issue, but it's an ongoing issue that might be looked at, and the implications of that. I would like to have heard a little bit more about why, but not necessarily now, but as we move forward into the period, I agree that we're really good at trying to get. But clearly, it being effectively a public entity now and possibly reported to taxpayer money by way of subsidies, if that's required, if there's a good business plan, maybe that won't be required. But obviously, there will be a social mandate that will be an important feature. But it won't be pursuing lucrative for the sake of it. We as a public sector, would need to ensure that it's offering mobility and accessibility to areas that would not otherwise have the ocean or physical service. So I think that becomes, and that's what Chris is just asking, a legitimate and good question, because it forces one then to, for it's not just that I hate like any other coach company, but depending on taxpayer money or turning a profit. For the public sector, it needs to justify as a public entity in ways that I would have liked to hear a little bit more about, and I'm sure that's part of the discussion.
I just sort of justify some of the implications or the leading questions I'm putting. I have no problem with the implications that there is going to be a level of subsidy, particularly on the long-haul side, because that effectively is providing a service, which we will argue for here, and I don't have any problem. But, you know, we need to also look at it in terms of reducing the cost to govern.
Yeah.
Now, if we're not going to go into this thing thinking that way, all we're going to do is implicate further costs towards a particular, let's call it loss leader, you know, as it stands at the moment in the Transnet net, by putting it into the burden of transport per se, where we've already got a limited amount of subsidy going into bus services, let's call them into the rural areas, really in the marginal routes. But here in the Succession Amendment Act, we're saying there's no financial implication. And I'm concerned that there is financial implication, because unless we've got a model to say to ourselves, look, this transfer possibility is going to be a book transaction, but come next year in the budget, we're going to be sitting here as parliamentarians and either approving or rejecting a budget for the purpose of operational stuff. Because Transnet's not going to be there to hold the hand of the department. And at the same time, for 2010, we're talking about the 1,400 coaches coming in, which are going to be absorbed into it. Now, my analogy was very clearly putting it this way. At the moment, it's 36 billion, all right? And yet, there's no financial implications in this document we received in terms of the amendment. Okay? And to top it off, we have not seen the modeling that you put forward in terms of trying to do that. That's what I'm trying to get at. I want to see something that's going to say to me that the department has actually looked at this implication by getting rid of the lease hires and the maintenance fleet and absorbing some of those new buses coming into it. We're going to run a very slick service, which is not maybe going to be competing through the private sector in any sense of the word, but at least getting it down to a place where we can either reduce the burden on the state and the taxpayer. That's all I'm asking. Because if you take the 1,402, I'll use that analogy again, and multiply or divide it by the number of buses currently in the fleet costing 36, it's going to be 6 times more. And I don't know what 36 by 6 is approximately or 7. That is my concern here, and I really want that to be emphasized, not the other implications of the subsidy, because I believe that there should be a special, implication. Thank you.
Can we have a response on that?
Thank you, Chair. I think the committee is quite correct in that we need to clarify the financial implications. And as part of the transfer, there are financial implications which we will be approaching the National Treasury to assist with. The other aspect in terms of the type of service, and I think and the business plan going forward that the FARTC would need to develop, is to ensure that, let's say the instruction is that the services would be of a social nature, in particular supporting the social rosa mail in terms of having connectivity. The rural transport strategy will be deployed in that perspective, and the majority of the standard buses, as per the new fleet, to then be deployed in the public transport network as the public transport strategy. I think the part of the issue and the decision that needs to be taken is the issue of the luxury service and whether that should continue, because that is already in a domain competing with other operators in the same market. And that's the decision I believe that the business plan needs to address. So whether we continue in that operating in that domain, and if we are, in what manner do we compete, and also probably ring-fence that outside of social services. So that would be the issue that the business plan would need to address.
I think the key thing that is emerged from this is two key things. So one is, as a committee, we need to obviously watch this process on behalf of the public quite closely going forward. And who is involved around this? So the department and the new railway corporation, whatever it is, in an ongoing way to make sure that it's complicated. Which has the 2010 feature about it as well, so there's going to be that other complexity. So that's one thing that we must resolve as a committee, or whatever, in Parliament, to keep a strong watching brief on it. But the second immediate thing is that we presumably have to change the wording where it says that there are no financial implications, and that would apply.
what's the disruption of the mail, and then what are the implications in terms of health insurance? We have to say Lord Byron.
Yeah, I can we as a result of all the time constraints, we the cabinet approved this bill on the 28th of last month, and we had to certify bills by the 1st to make the deadline. So we are currently dealing with the bill to with the proofs, and we will update and make sure that all the I haven't seen the cabinet memorandum, unfortunately, so that is. Between me and the department, we will update and make sure that the memorandum, the objects reflect the correct situation.
But if it's right, and that's what we're being assured by the Department of Transport, that indeed it is right, and that there are quite relatively significant financial implications, in other words, that the Department of Transport budget
we won't be able to anything any change will have to be done by amendments. We can't the cabinet approved bill is our mandate, so we work from that.
Yeah. Mandate, but obviously as part of it,
and then the amendments will come. Yeah.
We agree.
Yeah.
Can we leave the discussion there for the moment? But important discussion.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. I think we'll also just have one or two slides in the background, the court work has already been discussed. But and then I think we would like to thank the chair and the committee for giving us the opportunity to put forward some of our issues, which happily we've largely resolved. Unfortunately, and it's, we were hoping not to be here, but unfortunately, just some process issues with documentation and things on our side just actually prevented us from making an intervention during the cabinet process. And so, unfortunately, it went through, and we've now got to address the committee and hope that the committee takes pity on us.
No.
Again, this the point where we are at now in terms of the amendments of to the Legal Succession Act is really almost an end point in a way to a process that started in December 2004 through a cabinet decision that this committee is no doubt well aware of. Metro Rail transaction was done about 2 years ago. There were some requirements at that point to the Legal Succession Act, which required amendments to the pension fund provisions that would allow those members that were in Metro Rail that could transfer into the SARPC to, if they wanted to, keep their pension fund in the transfer environment. Those were the amendments that were then necessitated. The Shosholoza mail business now being transferred is in fact the final piece of that cabinet decision of 2004 that spoke about the consolidation of passenger rail entities. But as opposed to the Metro Rail transfer, this one does require a bit more substantive amendment to the Legal Succession Act. It involves an asset base. Some more people and so on, so this is a different type of transaction. through this process, the opportunity was also then taken to consolidate the long-distance bus services, the autopass, into the combined railway passenger entity in order to maximize the synergies between long-distance rail and long-distance passenger, which Jan David has alluded to in his presentation, particularly for FIFA World Cup 2010. And hence, therefore, the amendments to the proposed amendments include the request that the legal power be given to FRCC also to run that services, which they don't have at this point. Having said that, Chair, Honourable Members, the FRCC and Transnet, as the buyer and seller in the transaction, have been engaging quite extensively over the last 2 years or so, 18 months in this. There's a project management committee which has also, which is a broader committee comprising of CTE, DOT, Transnet, SRCC, National Treasury, which has been working on this transfer process as well for more than a year. So a lot of work has been done, which basically culminating in now the proposed amendments, which is in fact a precondition. If these amendments don't go through, then in fact FRCC does not have a legal power to run long distance bus or passenger service. So it's critically important that we try and get it right so that we can affect the transfer. There's a general on slide 3. There is a general process in the transfer environment which, you know, just to indicate that this is no different, it's not being dealt with in any other different way. It's a fairly standard process of disposing of a business or an asset by Transnet, or for that matter, any other business. And so that's the kind of process that's been gone through and which is essentially the modus operandi in terms of the negotiation between Transnet and SARCC for this business. And then, Chair, if we can then quickly move on to page 4, the implications for current provisions of the bill, which DPE does have some concern around, and Transnet as well. And we've, in our engagement process to date, it's just unfortunate that some of the things just didn't quite kind of fell by the wayside, and it's come out slightly, I think, problematic in the final version of the bill, which we believe is the real problem that we would like to see addressed. We generally have a concern with most of the proposed amendments in the bill. We only have real substantive problems with Section 25, the proposed for Section 25A1, Section 25A2, and 3. And primarily these problems revolve around legal and corporate governance matters. Okay.
We're looking at a quick packet of hard copy of the amendment.
Yes, starting page 6 here.
Right at the bottom. Section Transfer Act.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. So essentially what 25A1 provides for is it provides for the Minister of Transport, in consultation with the Minister of Public Enterprises, to identify the assets of the two businesses in question to be transferred from a Transnet or sold from Transnet to the SARCC on a date determined by the Minister of Transport. The date determined by the Minister of Transport is less of an issue, it's a non-issue, but that the two ministers will identify which those assets are is a legal and governance problem. Transnet has a board, SARCC has a board, both operating in terms of the Companies Act, and it's we can't see how either of the boards, in particular the Transnet board, can accept a number given by any other third party and just accept it as the number. So in it's not the correct place, Chair, for the legislation is not the correct place for them to indicate that the minister should decide which the assets are, or the two ministers, or any number of ministers. It should be a just the commercial negotiation between the two parties. If the needs be that it should be facilitated a little bit by the two ministers in order to resolve matters, that is something that we prefer rather than being in the legislation.
In a moment, so you're flagging the issues, the four issues that are problematic in the current provision.
Yes.
And then you'll come back and give us some detailed proposals.
And we have the other Word document is in fact the proposed rewriting which we discussed
earlier. So the moment is giving,
just giving the background there.
Good, thank you.
Secondly, also, if in fact we do proceed the way that the bill is currently drafted, it virtually amounts to an expropriation of those assets then where government decides these are the assets we're taking from you, this is the price we're willing to pay you, and therefore we're moving on. Which if that's the way to go, that would be the way to go. However, it also has then the other lengthy expropriation processes that one then has to go through and then, you know, forget to impact on the loan covenant of Transnet as well if the business just goes without real value being obtained back, derived back from it. The second point, I think, is 25A2, which is the purchase consideration, the consideration price for the assets, the price for the assets, which in the current version of the bill is basically provides for shares to be provided by SARCQ to Transnet for whatever the final value of the businesses are provided in still in the current form by the ministry. Unfortunately, again, I think in the discussions that we've had, we've tried to make it clear that to be given the shares is going to be a problem for Transnet. Transnet is, we want that business to focus on core freight operations, and we would want them to focus on getting that right. Therefore, they need to exit all of the passenger businesses. And if you're selling the business, why do you want to then have a share in the business anyway to consume management time and attention? Also, if you have the shares, it then means that you have an interest in this company, which when they report, when Transnet reports in the annual financial statement, they actually have to have their auditors audit the state of their interest in the SARCC in order to give a fair opinion of that, the value of that interest in the Transnet annual report. So there's a number of problems there with respect to Transnet being paid in terms of shares. Just the primary accounting issues that we believe is a problem. And then in terms of the final 25A3, the determination of the value of the assets. So the first one said that the ministers would decide which assets should be transferred, and 3 says the ministers would decide at what price these assets will be transferred. And again, as the extent there, you can read from 3, the value of the assets acquired by a corporation in terms of Subsection 1 shall be determined by the minister in conjunction with the Minister of Finance. So again, we just don't see that there's any place for that kind of wording in the legislation. It should be a commercial exercise between the two entities. Having said that, Chair, if we go back to the presentation material, we refer to due diligence that has been done during the process, and I think that's a good starting point that the companies need to proceed from, and we need to find some way. There have been difficulties, not least of which that the Metro Rail process didn't go too well. So, the parties are slightly on centers in terms of so there are some issues there, but which we rather resolve outside of legislation than in legislation. And then there's the transfer of the immovable property, and Transnet has defined, and they have been engaging with SARPC around which those properties could be and so on, in terms of the list of assets in, for both the Autopec business with the bus depot that Jan David has spoken about at different locations, as well as train stations and other properties of the social order mail business. And again, if there's a sense that between Transnet and SARPC there's difficulty in reaching agreement on what those are, again, we believe that it's not the correct place to do that in the legislation. Chair, those are our substantive concerns. In the next page, we basically highlight, which I have talked through anyway already now, some of the way that we would like to see it resolved, which we've captured after good discussion with Department of Transport officials yesterday afternoon, that we've substantively found a way that we could recraft the wording that would be more appropriate, and that would assist us to have this amendment bill go through the parliamentary process more speedily.
Thanks for that. Okay, can I then check with my colleagues from the Department of Transport to see whether
thank you, Chair. We did meet yesterday and we have crafted together and tabled some proposals with regard to how 25 could be recrafted. And they have been circulated. Might I just add that as part of this process, we've also, and will be guided by yourself and our legal people here, is one of the issues that have been overlooked in the amendment of this bill was Section 15, which at this point in time, Section 15 reads, I'm trying to find it,
Section 15 of the amendment.
Oh, no,
on the Legal Succession Act.
Legal Succession Act. Relationship. That's the one. Particularly provision one. In this provision, Chair, subject to the provisions of the section, the company, and that's in Transnet, shall provide at the request of the corporation or transport authority a service that is in the public interest. And quite clearly, the fact that Transnet now is moving away from passenger, this would be a consequential amendment to this legislation that would need to be addressed. And so, subject to the approval of the state law advisor as well, we will be proposing that section be repealed.
Just not the whole thing.
Yeah.
Another section. Okay.
Then, Chair, in terms of.
Are we now on the
25?
Yeah. We're now on the 1 page.
Okay. Item 2 on that 1 page is the suggestion in terms of how Section 25 could be recrafted. And Section 25A1, we're proposing, and like I said, it still needs to be guided by the legal eagles, in terms of, because the issue needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency, and as well as the fact that there are the financial implications, we're suggesting that from now till the end of the financial year should be the date, when this transaction should be concluded. Reason being that it also allows us space to negotiate with the National Treasury in terms of financial implications and so on. So we're proposing that the transaction with regard to when this thing needs to, when the contract needs to be finalized. That is the social automail and the autopay be determined in the act. However, in our discussion this morning with the legal people, some of them are not happy that we include it in the principal act, but maybe craft it in some other way, because if the deadline or the date is not met, then we need to come back to Parliament to change the date. So that's the first issue. Chair, and I can then read out clause 2 of the proposed 22A, which deals with the asset. And it says all liabilities, rights, and obligations of whatever nature related to assets and the business operations that form part of the transfer referred to in subsection 1 shall be transferred to the company, or shall be transferred from the company to the corporation on the date of such transfer. And this this is the issue concerned raised by DPE and Transnet. And one of the issues that came out of committee yesterday was the issue that we need to differentiate between what is legislated and what is negotiated. And we didn't believe that this provides the opportunity for the negotiations to move forward in terms of identifying those assets. The issue relating to this is that there is a mechanism currently in place in terms of an HOA between the parties in terms of the issue of negotiations and the dispute resolution mechanism should they not reach agreement on the allocation of the assets. So that's already in place. Which would then that dispute resolution mechanism in terms of the heads of agreement would then escalate to the ministers eventually if they cannot agree. The other aspect, Chair, also relating to the assets that need to be transferred and included in sub 3. Is the issue of a process in terms of transfer of some of the property from Transnet as part of this transaction to be granted some indulgence so that the process can be speeded up with regard to such land, and that is not to comply with all the requirements in terms of writing in terms of getting town planning schemes and a whole lot of issues sorted out. I was going to ask Petro Bowe to explain that issue in detail about the land aspect, because that will then speed up the process and would then in effect make sure that if that property needs to be transferred by the end of this transaction phase or the 31st of March, it can happen in that phase. If we follow the long drawn out process now, it may happen after the day. And maybe Petro Bowe can just provide some light on that.
Yes,
sir.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the main issue at hand is that in terms of Section 31 of the Act, there is a shortened process for transferring immovable property in the deeds office. But the preceding processes for that property to be transferred, especially when you deal with properties such as stations and so on, they have to be excised from a current deed for ownership document or charter, as the case might be. And there are various planning pieces of legislation all over the country that has not yet been nationalized. And in order to assist to facilitate that particular process, it is being proposed that those processes do not apply, but with the interaction of the planning authority concerned to expedite that particular aspect. And once that has been done, then to utilize the shortened deed registry process as provided for. Hence the proposed consequential amendment of Section 31 of the Act to also refer to Section 25A, which has been proposed in the document.
Okay, thank you. I'm just reading quickly the actual text of what's been under the proposal.
you know, a lot of these little things that are going to be there, which we were aware, I mean, you've raised them now, for instance, like, you know, the utilization, the subdivision of properties for the purpose of these. I mean, this is going to happen, it could take a year. But surely we should actually take this out of this law and just say that by virtue of some memorandum or heads of agreement between these two parties, you are going to deal with this matter over whatever time and create some use of that for the purpose of the matter.
This is not between, this is not, not, I mean, what we don't want to get tangled up in too much is the negotiations that happen between the corporations and transit. We don't want to get tangled up in this. So we want to enable and empower that process. Here we're dealing with existing legislation. Okay, and other entities and authorities. That's the problem here. So, nice memorandums of understanding between Railfood Corporation and don't cut ice when some local authority says, hang on, you can't, you know, you might want to, I assume, subdivide a station where there's a freight shunting section of it and there's a clearly a part of it which is manifestly about passengers getting on north. And it makes sense to separate that. So that's a subdivision.
Mm.
Now, presumably there's legislation and local, all kinds of local requirements and so on, which could affect that. And therefore, you don't want to keep them out of the picture. Because you want their cooperation, and it's correct. And our philosophy and transport is that we want local authorities to have a sense of their transport environment. And we want rail to be forced to be talking to local authorities and we want that. But at the same time, we don't want a thousand pieces of bylaws and legislation and so on taking us the next 20 years to effect a subdivision of a station environment, partly between rail to be forced to be forced and some other bits of relational trends. So we're overriding. Now, whether we can do this, State law advisor, we need to ponder on that and just think whether we can introduce this override thing. But it makes a lot of sense. If we were infringing, because it's a matter between Transnet and Rail Service Corporation, it's not really a matter between a municipality or some other authority, other than that they should be in the loop of understanding what's happening. That's very important.
Sorry, I overrode
you.
Yeah, I realize what you're saying. And what I'm trying to get at here, if we go to the new clause that's been considered there, it's actually in conflict with Elvin, as I understand, in terms of some of the proposals. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
You?
No, sir.
But you are disagreeing with Section 2 of 25A as presented to us here.
As was then, yes.
And also Section 3.
Yeah, the original
amendment.
Yes.
Now, I'm going back to the founding document, 25, on page 190.
Yes?
Page 190.
If
I understand that section 25 lays down a process with a few amendments that you might have to make now, because, you know, we don't have a minerals and energy ministry or whatever the case may be. If we amend 25 to satisfy the needs of what we're trying to achieve in this process, and add to it 25A, if you want to call it, to say that, you know, the details relating to this values and assets and shares and everything is dealt with by heads of agreement or something between the parties, have we not solved the problem here?
No.
Why not?
We're not in agreement between, we're dealing here not with the agreement between the two entities. We want them to deal with. You want them to get on with it, but you don't want ministers barging. We want ministers to help facilitate the process, but we don't want ministers to barge in to actually the value of the
government.
Shouldn't
be anyway.
Then,
too bored.
And that's what. We want to get on with their negotiations like a normal commercial negotiation. But while they're doing that, there's another broader environment with hundreds of other authorities and entities. Bylaws which say you can't subdivide a property in this area unless it comes through our planning authority, and then you do this, unless you do that, and so on. If we then do quantity surveying, and then all the things that happen. And that has 2 years, 3 years more cost, etc. Undermining precisely what you correctly say we want to wanted to see in it, namely a good, effective, politically guided commercial negotiation between we want that to be the problem, the driving reality, and for it to happen quickly. That's what we want. For it to happen quickly, we've got to then try to override a number of other pieces of legislation and so on that could undermine their neat agreement. The local authority might say, no, sorry, Transnet, that can't become a railway station, that's a freight yard, that part of it can't be.
Yeah.
Our plan is haven't done with it like that. So you actually undermine what we're trying to do. That's a bit difficult. Whether we can do, I think we need the state law advisors to do it. Not just people with one, but I think there's people ponder on it. And I'm sure there are people to do this.
I think I've got, you know, what the understanding of it is, and I think it needs to be someone just to tweak it and to, you know, put it into a form that we can actually make sure that this thing goes on while we legislate, and that, you know, while there's still something legally taking place and binding the parties towards this transaction.
Yes.
I think Metrorail was done like that, am I correct? Although you say there were problems with it, I mean, outside of this, the detailing and the actual implications of how this gets subdivided and the property gets transferred, etc., is going to be a project.
I think the chair has listened to me. The issue with SRCC Metrorail was Metrorail owned no assets. They operated the assets of the SRCC in the country.
Okay.
I'm
personally happy. I'm happy with our thing. We can. In a moment, we've kind of jumped the gun a little bit, but it would be useful if we just in detail get as far as we can this morning, which maybe is not much further than we've got now, but let's just then complete, because we haven't looked at Greek amendments of Section 31. We have by indication, but let's just take us through that quickly.
Chairperson, just to reiterate, the proposed amendment in 25A is to cut bureaucracy. Just to shorten that, there's no letter required. But once you're able to do that, then you still have to register it. And the Act currently already has that possibility in Section 51. However, that section does not refer to this new included Section 25A. So it's just tidying up to say that where you've subdivided, that you've gone through this shortened bureaucratic process, you can then still use the Section 51 process in the deed office to actually register that transfer.
So that's just a consequence.
That's a consequence.
Okay, there we are. Okay.
I can call up instead of all this, but I heard a suggestion that it should be placed outside of the law. But my suffering would be for us to force the state. We're talking about this with our eye on 26. So there's another interview from Congress, which I think is next year.
Yeah.
And then after that, we have to. So that will be our trial run in this way. So I don't see, actually see some benefits from forcing
Let's first of all, let's see whether we provisionally agree on dropping sections. Let's use now as our empty and we'll come then we'll need it to come to the country. So Section 15 of the Principal Act. In principle policy from the party members. That's a very long section in the principle act, but it's governed by this the very first line of the statement, which is that the company, I don't know my head, but the company will, you know, no longer be troubled probably. No, we'll have to supply, if requested, we'll have to supply public transport or services again. By at the request of the corporation.
so that's no longer a function of transport. What we're trying to put up. So and then all that follows from it equally becomes irrelevant. So I think we would need to just look at it properly, I mean, not now, and particularly ask, and I think that's also what our colleagues have asked from the two departments, if we could ask the state board about this, something we all overlook, is to just go through it again, make doubly sure that pulling it out doesn't undermine some other sections somewhere, just so we get our conductors. But I think we're all in support of what we're trying to do here.
To just give comfort to Honorable Randy Mashiro, the provision in terms of the services, they are still provided by the SRCC or the successor to the SRCC in terms of flows in the city of the principal act.
Actually, on that particular point of 23, because in the Principal Act, it clearly speaks of the commuter operations of the SRCC. Unfortunately, what has happened in the proposed amendment, in the proposed replacement for 23, it only refers to the new SARCC now providing only long-haul services. So we need to bring the commuter component back into the amendment. But we're effectively taking away the right to operate commuter
services.
And if it's a problem, it just undermines the Pope. So, yes, you can fire a minister or a DC or whatever, and that's fine. That's easy. But you need to do this urgently, not legally.
Yes.
And you might find that having put in an urgent date, and for good reason or bad reason, spray over the day, then you've got to come back to Parliament. You then have another group, and a Parliament that won't be around because it's going to be electioneering. So I think we just need to think about
K through you, if I can just check with the state law advisor. If we could think about including a piece just below that, to then give some kind of a mandate to the two ministers, to then, if this date has not been met, within 6 months from that date, to then have the matter complete.
Okay,
and
that
is
the relationship that we want to put all in legislation.
Yeah.
And not just walk away from
and
the understanding that we've all got a job to drive this process from our own.
You're going to see this in the interview.
Just to raise an issue with regard to the tape, as much as we've suggested the tape, the PFMA would not allow us or not allow the transaction to go forth if the funds are not made available for the National Treasury. So I thought I'd maybe just raise that and put it on the table, because it is a risk.
The committee needs to impress on the three ministers to move to the
one in particular. Adding a huge additional.
not going to alter the
guide. Okay, let's all go away and think about it. It has obvious advantages, but it has potential problems. Let's not think about it again. Okay. Right, then subsection 2. Okay, that seems to say the obvious. I'm not quite sure what it's doing, but I don't think it just means that everything comes across. Okay, that's obvious, or should be obvious. Any issues there on subsection 3, notwithstanding provisions of any tax, that's the thing we've looked at. Do you have any concerns around that? Can we provisionally agree with the obviously all of this has been drafted in the course of yesterday. And certainly we need to be again, so we're getting lots of money to be up there for a while. Probably coming on subsection 3 of the one page. The overarching question is it okay to do this kind of to override?
Yeah, no.
And secondly, if you could look at the wording of something, not now again, but just maybe in answer to the first question.
Yeah, it has been done and it can be done. We must just make sure that we don't encroach on any rights that any person might have in terms of the Bill of Rights.
Let's get a law, that rather than
job. Yeah, exactly.
There's just one other question. Related. Or do you want to hold on?
Yeah, sure. Also, I wanted to raise the position on 3B, where it calls the local authority to respond within 30 days. Within 30 days. When the local authority is not set up, and decides to do something. So I'm actually seeing that, you know, that 30 days seems to be a problem. Because you see, what I'm saying here is that this is not one that are administered by the local authority.
Yeah.
Therefore, they will need to know this particular obligation.
Now, there's an obligation under A for the company to inform a relevant authority. The little station somewhere in Pumalanga,
yeah,
will be there. This station in Pumalanga, which is in a municipality.
Okay.
So, that 50 A here is obliging the company to inform the local authority that what we're going to do, what we're planning to do for 6 months' time, is to transfer this part, keep this part within the Transnet role, it's the Transnet yard or whatever, but the station will be transferred to Shoppel or the Mail within that part of the road. We're informing you. Okay, so there's a subdivision, and in terms of your bylaws, we're obliged to inform your subdivision as well. However, in terms of this legislation, we're informing you. And if you've got any issues that you'd like to drive into, you've got dedication to drive into, and we will take note of what you're saying, and maybe even should erase something that we're short of. But we don't get our mandate from you. We will proceed exactly as we can, or we might make allowance for at least. We'll make sure that the Rail Commuter Corporation the Transnet is always allowed to have things to happen now that it's a change of ownership with the part of it, there's some local needs and so on, and we'll make sure that the Rail Commuter Corporation is aware of those and so on. But the key thing is, so we kind of have a consultative process, we're not just trying to push people out of the way, but at the same time we're not allowing them to get in the way so that we can move privately into the transport.
Yeah, I've got a different. I actually have a different view. Maybe we'll have to find another forum on the first place because it does not allow the municipal authority, you know, it's an embargo on transformation. But he said, you know, it allows to have, you know, this agency, you know, to actually undermine the township team environment, something like this. But because you see, to oblige the municipality to answer within 30 days. If the municipality has got a different point on those basic things for running those particular requests through its planning authority, then the legislature, if it is 60 days, this tends to undermine that. You almost have the municipality from this cooperation. I think it's probably, maybe we'll further it today.
Okay.
But the size of the importance of the municipality.
Correct. But then to oblige the municipality to answer within a particular number of days. That's what I have.
So you're
not in favor of the
30%
part of the law?
No,
by implication.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is, if we want to get this through by the 30% part and support part of the law, then we've really got to look at how we're getting the cost. That's what we're doing. That's why we're doing in transition fee. Okay. That's why we're doing transition fee. So that we don't have dozens of municipalities all saying, no, you can't subdivide. And in terms of our bylaw, we will not allow you to do that. Or in terms of this or that planning or piece of legislation, we will not allow you to subdivide it. So we've got to put something in like this if we want to meet the 30 days. Otherwise we will run into a myriad of issues because we're dealing with property and we're dealing with dozens of non-aligned pieces of legislation.
final. Okay. Now, the danger of that is that you become non-inclusive. That's why Russia is over. So it's good that it is a consultation process, but it's a consultation process. It's not because there's also with Relative Incorporation and Transnet won't be planning for the municipality. All that's happening is that property that is wholly owned by Transnet, some of it will now be subdivided, some of it will now be owned by Relative Incorporation. That's all that's happening. So it can't really easily be hugely impacting on the municipal authority plan. But they plan it around Transnet property. And we would like to talk to Transnet and maybe persuade them to extend the station and all of that is not made possible. It has to be facilitated because if you've got a public transport entity focusing on the station, then you're going to get better synergies between and operator and the entity. Then a freight logistics. On the way between one thing and another. They're not really, it's just a corridor. But if you're in the passenger business, then you're really interested in it. So it should facilitate. Right. I was going to ask,
Chairperson, yes, I think to take a good example, first of all, we must bear in mind we're talking about existing properties. Now, I did the inspection last week in the Jaws vicinity. The area where the Jaws station is physically located, my understanding from the property colleagues, is held under one title deed. So, if the station buildings are to be transferred to SARCC, we have to excise that from the rest. And this process will allow us to engage with the planning authority, be it the municipality, be it another regional planning authority, what the case might be, to actually just get their concerns as well. This is to shortcut the actual letter that we need to have in our hands. Now, the kind of objections that I can envisage at this stage is to say, listen guys, you've got only one entry point for services on this whole title deed. We won't have any problem, but just create a separate water and electricity meter for the station so that SLCC can pay their dues. Is this those kind of objections and things that are relevant? Because the station is already there, it's already operating. There's not necessarily even the use that's going to change. It's just excising that particular portion of a broader or bigger deed, ownership deed or title deed, and giving that title to that particular portion to another entity.
Okay, let's this is so important.
You know, a lot of my questions have been answered to a point. I don't think there's going to be too many arguments about, you know, the rationale behind it. But what I am sort of arguing about, get back to Lennox's concern about putting a certain amount of legislation which is cross-cutting across the field of government to say that relevant authorities now must be compliant in terms of a certain time to do X, Y, Z. Particularly in light of what you've just raised now. And that is my problem and my concern as to whether in fact we're not going to be having this thing now going to the National Council of Provinces and then having to be referred down at levels, you know, of different spheres to be able to get this thing to be agreed to in principle. Not that everyone does, you know, no one's going to object to any of this. But you could get a difficult metro like Cape Town, you know. who might come up with a problem and say, well, how are we going to access that site vis-a-vis water, electricity, water? And they're going to say, but hang on, guys, we've got like 15 other thousand applications sitting on our things that we're not going to be able to do this in 30 days. So I think we've just got to get the state law advisor to think about this very carefully to ensure that what we want to happen happens and that it doesn't end up being bogged down in some, you know, authority or objections being put back in terms of this particular act from, you know, whatever participation has to take place from here on. That's all I'm concerned about. I'm not for anything trying to put sort of, you know, things in the way of this process, but can we not be more, maybe think of some words that can actually make this thing happen without it actually and then saying, you know, once this is done, this can carry on, you know, in the future. So we get it legalized.
Okay,
that's all I'm going to do.
Thank you very much. There are lots of analysts things that investment is possible. Fluid type has actually that to cut. Now, all we are saying is declare the impact. And not that conclude all negotiations, everything. So you can, the only thing is declare your impact. So, I think that's just, it's more than enough. It's just to say, we acknowledge, we studied in the last year. Better than the failure. We acknowledge that we looked at the signal, presented our interest on the policy. Give us 30 more days, so give us a year to work to deal with the implications. But I cannot see this being too much to ask of the local authority. They declare your interest to be intended. If you work, after 30 working days, so if you don't appear in business, asking them to work on
I'm aware of some of the stations, you know, they have different, you know, company zones, and you find that in the station there's a shop inside, and 1, 2, 3, and when you subdivide into the shop outside, and then they start getting a different zone within the company, you know, of the municipality, which is Kaduna, here's the municipality to Kaduna. Like earlier, whatever you can raise, just subdivide the problems of safety. You know, it's the municipality to administer those particular new sites after subdivision in terms of area, like the water meter. You know, these things go from one section in the municipality to the next, until they all need conclusive comments about that before a decision is taken, whether there's an obstruction or no obstruction. And my problem is that if the municipality is not administering this particular legislation, then it obliges them, you know, we have got an obligation for the municipality which the municipality may not be aware of. You know, they will only come across it when it is written in that particular letter. And if you have a municipality that they've got, like that we have, they're having steel shortage and all these other things, and then you'll always have a problem. You write the letter and then they will respond and they start fighting you.
What I'm hearing is the reason to keep the 31st of March day in, and secondly, to proceed in this way, because we, of course we've got challenges, and that's the issue that we're trying to get to the 31st of March, and we're not trying to just run Russia over local planning and so on. But on the other hand, this very important transfer, not least because of 2010 and so on, but certainly not only for that reason, we can't sit around going at the pace of the slow ship in the convoy, you know, and that's what we're trying to do. So let's get specific answers. I mean, there are two fundamental issues that I'm hearing. The one is businesses operating on station property, for instance. One, obviously, they have to live they don't own the property, they lease it. And then
subdivide, then you've got to have two water meters in the farm. Obviously, Transnet would be very keen to make sure that the rail community corporation part of the station gets its own water meter and so on. So it would be driven more between the entities than by the battery as far as those units and so on. But can we, I mean, are there any further thoughts on the side of the official on this area?
Chair, I mean, and we do note the concerns, and I think it's precisely why we proposed it. But I think truthfully, Chair, we don't really foresee many objections because it's practice is there anyway. All we're trying to do is because we suspect 99.9% of these municipalities will just come back saying, okay, fine, no problem. The issue is that it could take a year for that no fine, no problem, go ahead. There's no issue. And that's what it could take 2 years or 3 years. And that's all that we're trying to fast track in this process is that it just come back with, you know, with a response.
Okay.
But
that's going to take the operation.
No.
The train will still run through that station and until that transfer takes place, there will still be some use of fact arrangements that you've got to, you know, get into in London. And that's why I'm saying, and to come back to my original visit,
we want rail community corporation to take charge of the new act. And the plan in a business like way, in a strategic way, and to use that and not to be bogged down in a thousand localities waiting for a year actually now shipping for we want two water meters, not that one water meter and so on. And then you have a grey area where there's some use of that. Let's transfer that easily and as quickly as possible on terms that are agreeable to the city parties and get on with driving these developments to the transfer. Understood? That's got to be the issue. And it's tangled up in thousands of local locations. I'm not sure who and what, when it's going to come across, but it's just going to undermine. I'm really sympathetic to what I'm also very keen on is an ongoing relationship between Rail Commuter Corporation and the municipalities in which it finds, and we've always pushed that very strongly, and when we come to the National Land Transport Bill, we'll also be looking at that. So we want local transport authorities or planning authorities, whatever they will be, and the public entities operating in the environment to be engaged in all kinds of ways. That's why in the National Port Act, we call for consultative forums between the city, the province, and the port authority, and so on. So we've always tried to, so it's not about a one-off thing transfer, it's about an ongoing engagement. We certainly want that. But we don't want to hold up that trip. It's not like the transfer in a myriad of legal problems and delays, which limits its argument underlying because you're saying it's not a capacity, it takes time, there's tons of bit of paper to be seated in the bathroom, and 30 days is unreasonable and so on. But it can't be unreasonable to expect. In practice it might be, but then it's the problem of missing that municipality, not what you're trying to do. Anyone arguing?
Well, I guess I don't have a question. Is this amendment only for this community? Because I am aware there are so many people who are interested to come and live in this community to apply for those areas who are not the if I can make an example, last year I took a group to Johannesburg where they did a presentation. And they must go a long route for giving attendance. That's the problem I have.
Yeah, no.
When a certain people come, they make quickly amendments. For those who want to make the opportunity for them, those people can go up.
Okay, no, but that is what we're trying to get. We agree that public transport in general is not great enough. It's terrible. we're trying in a lot of different ways to create inclusion. One of the things is to get, first of all, to integrate buses, long distance buses, with long distance passenger buses. That's a critical thing. In other words, so that people can access long distance rail system. We bring more people back into long distance rail users. Price of petrol is going to help us greatly in this endeavor. The low cost airlines that are currently eating into Translux viability, they are in trouble. Those low cost airlines around the world. So there are other dynamic realities as well. So this what we're trying to do here is get a company, Transport Rail Community Corporation, but which will be a metric which will involve commuter rail, long distance rail, and long distance buses. And hopefully, if you put them all together and you get that transport focus on those streets, then we can begin more. You see, at the moment, these things are all over the place. You've got Metro Rail dealing but narrowly with Metro Rail issues, you've got AutoPax stuck in Transnet. Transnet doesn't like it. AutoPax doesn't know what it's supposed to be doing. So there's no attention given to it, and it's not dynamically linked up to the rail, to other public transport systems. So this is a small bit of legislation, but it's one building block in the bigger picture of what we're trying to do. And the big advantage we've got is we've got the money fund, thanks to 2010. And we're going to use this opportunity to move across a broad front in the public transport domain. To really achieve the legacy. That's what we're busy with as a committee. And it looks like it's fiddly and little delays about subdividing sessions and so on. But the bigger picture is actually quite an exciting political picture. We've got an opportunity which we haven't had for many years. No money, public transport is just on the bottom of the list. So we actually, Cabinet has given public transport a strategic centrality, the key legacy we want to get out of 2010. And we mustn't fail that process, which is why the debate we had earlier about 31st of March was a good debate, because we've really got to keep the pressure on. Because come 2010, who can be sure that there'll be so much excitement and sense of urgency around funding public transport, and we might get pushed back into the market. But if we move, we can do it. That's the broader picture. So you're absolutely right to be frustrated about the experience you had with your learning. Trying to get them, I think, from Cape Town to Durban, I think. Hopefully, you know, things will be better, not perfect, but will be better. And we need to support the two businesses. That's what we're trying to do. That's the thing that we're doing. If we share a conversation with our
partners, we might agree 100%. Can I just ask something of the officials? Maybe they can just give us a picture of what we might be dealing with, since it's not as wide as I think. It's not every station along the line. What number of properties? 10, 20, 30?
Yeah,
exactly. So we can do a big consumer volume.
Yes, exactly.
Somewhere between 50 and 60
stations,
yeah, depending on what the final agreed with the properties.
And then there's depots, the AutoPax,
and
AutoPax
depots.
But presumably there won't be subdivisions.
No.
That's
owned by the PTY Limited. It's just going to have a new owner.
The slightly tricky thing will be the stations. Potentially, and maybe not even. That might not even involve subdivision. There could presumably be slightly larger ones where they're shunting yards.
No.
Can we close now, more of a thing?
No, just on the same presentation. Alvin, you mentioned something which I debated yesterday about the same thing. You talked about the unhappiness somewhere of the name.
Second last page.
Something that makes up a nice acronym as well.
No, Chair, I think we got caught as well with InfraCo broadband on our side, just as some arbitrary name, and I think we need to be a bit more creative and excite the passengers a bit.
Okay, thanks very much. Now, we continue with it next week.
We have two other methods which we would like to table for the committee's consideration. But on what we've discussed so far, you know, our minister has approved that.
That
is our formal submission.
Perhaps we should say DOT hasn't done that. We'll just say that we haven't got the NR on our list.
We still need to go back to our
phone.
They didn't scope out.
Yes. So, just flag what are the two other issues?
On the last page of the presentation, on page 8 of the page, which we didn't get, and I lost it in the presentation. It's not an ambush, Chair. It's just as we were working on this presentation, finalizing it last night, we had thought about two other methods that we would like to put to the Chair. So this we haven't discussed with the DOT colleagues.
Okay. And I can see the telecom.
Yes, the Principal Act, and in terms of the proposed amendments, if we deal with the telecoms issue, it should just reflect which isn't in the scene. So which I think we should just have some amendment there to that part of the Principal Act, which reflects that any telecom operator should have access to whatever part of the network that is where the lines are. At the moment, the Act only confines it. The Principal Act confines it to transfer the SRC activity. But because of the new Telecommunications Act, we now need to broaden access. So that should be the one. The first one on the medical aid, which we think could be a useful inclusion in these amendments, which is very similar to the amendments that we made for the pension fund arrangement, is that those employees from Shoshaloda Mail that's moving over to SARCC or the new successor entity, should they want to remain with the Transmed medical aid, we could provide for them to do so, to remain there. They feel that the benefits of that scheme offers them more than what they might find at another one. Yes. So we could look at them tweaking that question. Because at the moment, the Principal Act is Transmed, is only for Transmed employees. And so when they go, they won't have that option.
So we'll meet on Tuesday again. We've given the state law advisor all those The Department of Transport was just also assured that their principal, principals are happy with what is now coming fresh on them. So it's moving beyond where cabinet has taken it, but that's fine. Obviously, whether your principals are happy or not, and it's still our little bit of sovereignty as part of it. But we're sure that the principals are happy, but we'll make up our own mind. But we do like it to come in the sense of being effectively mandated. Okay. That's good. We won't try to finalize.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with this. I think a lot of other members might be affected by the Tuesday AGM on
we won't push through anything that, I'm not expecting anything dramatic to do. If there is, then you'll give ourselves this and the time we want to apologize or something. No, absolutely. Okay, thanks very much. And thanks to our colleagues from the two departments. The work that you did yesterday was helpful to us. We appreciate that.
I will come up with your message.
Yeah, that's fine.